Hello everyone, you're listening to J Movie Talk, episode 146, as I'll be talking Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
And right now, I've got two men. Two men with a gut full of fear. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, dying time's here. He's the ball cracker, death on foot. You know him, you love him. He's Blaster! The Challenger, direct from out of the wasteland. He's bad, he's beautiful, he's crazy. It's the man with no name!
Hey, what's going on, everybody? I am back to conclude my Mad Max trilogy. Hope you've been enjoying the previous two episodes where I talked about Mad Max and The Road Warrior. And now I'm here to finish this original trilogy up as I'll be talking about Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. So, before, of course, I get into that, I just want to talk about George Miller and his involvement, or somewhat lack thereof, that he had in this film. So even though he's credited as director for this movie, which he is, but he also shares directing credit with another George Ogilvy, who, from what I understood and where the story goes, is that Ogilvy was brought in to direct more of the character parts of the movie, where George Miller focused more on the action stuff and the car chases and everything like that, because George Miller was basically going through a rough time because a good friend of his actually passed away before the film actually started filming. So he just kind of somewhat, you know, relegated himself to just kind of into the action stuff, but he didn't really want to deal too much with the character stuff. So watching this movie with that understanding, really, you can kind of tell there is a little bit of a difference in style with certain parts of the movie because of that. And especially if you watch, you know, the first couple of films of the series that George Miller directed solely by himself, you can kind of tell a little bit that there is a little bit of a difference in how things kind of contrast. And in particular, that's why the movie feels like two movies in one, because you have two different directors directing one movie, which I don't think has ever really happened before. I mean, we've had like duo directors directing together, but you've never really had two directors directing films that basically seem like they're two films in one. So it's kind of interesting in that regard. But before I actually get into talking about the movie, of course, as you know, I always do my cast rundown here. So, of course, we have Mel Gibson returning as Mad Max or whatnot. We have Tina Turner as Auntie. Now, she's credited as Auntie Entity, but we never hear the Entity part, but she is referred to as Auntie in the movie. Bruce Spence, he returns as Jediah the Captain. Well, he's the pilot, really, Jediah the pilot, which I'll talk more about him later on, because there's some interesting stuff in regards to him. And then we have a bunch of other people that's in this film as well. I'll probably mention them as I talk about specific things, but the main three would probably be Mel Gibson, of course, Tina Turner, and Bruce Spence. So the movie opens with an older Max than what we saw in The Road Warrior, because The Road Warrior takes place 5 years after the original film, where this movie takes place 15 years after The Road Warrior, which makes it 20 years after the original film. So basically, he's even further out now in this wasteland and everything. And the car has no gas. He still has the V8, ironically, but it doesn't have any gas. He's actually riding it as if it's a freaking wagon at this point. It's being pulled and everything like that, and he has long stringy hair. He just a he's just a raggedy man. Which that line will come back later on. But he's basically, just kind of living whatever life he has at this point. And all of a sudden we see this plane come overhead, and it's Jedediah and Jedediah Jr. And they basically rob Max. They basically knock him off the car. They steal the car and they take off and leave Max, out in the desert, to some degree. And he basically follows the tracks of the car to this little town called Bartertown, because that's where they eventually took the car and everything. Now, one thing that was very interesting about the whole Jedi character is that when we first see him, because we know, if for anyone who's seen The Road Warrior, you know that Bruce Spence played the gyro captain. And the last time we saw him, he flew off, he didn't fly off, but him and Max, they were together at the end with the big crash and everything. And from what the Pharaoh kid, who's the narrator, he explained that the gyro captain took him to meet up with the rest of the survivors and everything. And he was the leader for a while. And then once he passed away, the Pharaoh kid became the leader of that group and everything. So when we see him here, he's playing a completely different character, but he has all kind of the similarity. He has similarities of the gyro captain. So it was kind of interesting. Like, okay, did they write this and kind of ignoring the fact that narration at the end of The Road Warrior, or is he really supposed to be a completely different character, which we never get a true definition of? But there are some particular hints that maybe he is the same character. But at the same time, he doesn't recognize Max later on in the movie when they actually have a face-to-face meeting and everything. So I thought that was kind of interesting, especially, even though you might not know someone, you haven't seen someone in about 15 years, but if you went through something with them as extreme as they go through in The World Warrior, and especially the way Max treats the gyro captain in The Road Warrior, you will remember this guy if you saw him years later and everything. But anyway, so like I said, Max, he ends up at Bartertown, and this place is basically like this shanky town or whatnot, and everybody is hustling and everything. They live basically like in a cave to some degree, and this place looks completely dingy, dirty or whatnot. And so Max, he's looking for the car. He finds it and he wants to get it back, but it's been sold and everything. So basically Max has to figure out a way to get his car back without without anything really happening to it. And he still has it basically booby-trapped, but unlike the Road Warrior, these people, they basically disarm it because of the fact that they needed to help, with their electricity, which is run by pig crap to some degree, and that's what they're going to use the car for and everything. But so here is where we're introduced to Auntie, played by Tina Turner, and the duo of Master and Blaster, which is a two-person kind of operation. Master is the little man, while Blaster is the big guy, but he has no face and everything. So they kind of work in tandem or whatnot. And here is where things kind of kick into gear, because Tina Turner, who is Auntie, she is the leader of this community. But at the same time, she wants to kind of phase out Master Blaster, because Master feel that he is truly the one who runs Bartertown. And there's a scene where he kind of flexes his muscle in that regard, and he actually forces Auntie to kind of say that he is the one who runs Bartertown, and this pisses her off. So after this happens, she enlists Max to basically kill Blaster that way she can really control Master in a way. So and the only way to really do this is to have a fight in Thunderdome. You spin the wheel, you make a deal type of situation, or whatnot. But so this happens, and Max, he's a willing mercenary to some degree here, and he decides to go through with it. So we get this interesting fight in Thunderdome and everything. And for its time, it was very interesting. It's funny now when you think about it. It's almost like, for wrestling fans, it's almost like Hell in a Cell, or even War Games to some degree. Or for newer fans, it's more like an Elimination Chamber or even an MMA type situation. Really, it's just you have all these different weapons and things, and you're attached to this freaking bungee jumping contraption as you're jumping around the freaking thing. But we get Max versus Blaster in this thing, and it seemed like Blaster is a professional at this, which kind of throws Max off. For he thought it was going to be a little easier than what it was, and then Max kind of have to, you know, re-strategize, and he does, and he eventually gets the better of Blaster when he gets this freaking sledgehammer and basically starts hitting him in the head, because he uses his whistle, because he realizes that Blaster is affected by whistle sounds. So he uses his whistle to distract him, and then he starts beating him in this metal juggernaut looking helmet thing that he wears until he actually knocks the helmet off. And then when Max is about to, you know, basically bash his head in, he gets up on him, and he realizes that the guy that's been under this helmet is basically a handicapped person, and everything like that. He's just a big muscular type fellow and everything. So Max decides not to do it, and it looks as a, in Auntie's eyes, it's looked at as defiance against her, and they still kill Blaster anyway. And then Max ends up becoming a prisoner, and so they basically spin the wheel for Max, and then they banishes him out into the wastelands on the back of a horse. They send him the wrong way and just with his hands tied behind his back, and they sit him off into the wasteland where he eventually goes. And here is where he's saved by a few of the by a few kids that were out on patrol and everything like this. They're basically like the Children of the Flies, really. Lord of the Fly, you know, or whatnot. And they take him back to where they live, which is basically like some little secluded sanctuary type looking place or whatnot. And Max, he regains consciousness. They cut his hair and everything, so he gets the short haircut again and everything like that. And this whole thing about these kids are obsessed with this Captain Walker, and that's who they want to say that he is. And he's like, I'm not no freaking Captain Walker here, you know, and that I'm just a guy in a way. So once again, here's Max being the reluctant, you know, wannabe leader of anything again. And but this time, instead of being a bunch of grown people and children, he's just a bunch of kids, to the most part. And so he, you know, he spends some time with these kids and everything, and their leader, Savannah Nix, played by Helen Bundy, she's basically like the leader of this group and everything like that. And Max, you know, they kind of become somewhat friendly-ish. I mean, of course, she's too young for Max, but she's like the woman in his life again, because he Max has this bad way with women in his life, going all the way back to the first movie. I mean, of course, his wife, you know, ends up being critically injured in the first film. And then in the second film, him and the warrior woman, they have like a somewhat of an attraction, but they never go through with it. But Savannah Nix is basically like the oldest one of, so I would say she's probably about in that 18 to 20 age or whatnot. But Max is an old man at this point, but still, anyway, I'm not gonna go down that road. But you know, they kind of become friends or whatnot, and Max, he says, I can help get you guys out of here, because you can't live here forever type of situation. And it's kind of interesting that the plan is for them to go back to Bartertown and everything. But before I actually get into that part of talking about it, just want to talk about Tina Turner for a second in this movie. So Tina Turner, this was like the biggest movie that Tina Turner has been in. I mean, in the mid-70s, yeah, she showed up in a few not too, you know, big known movies or anything like this. But when 1985 came along with Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, that's how we get Tina Turner here. And it's still the only movie that she's done, you know, in the sense that where she really was an actor and everything. And she does a really good job in it. Even though she's not an actor, she's a singer, but she does a really good job. And plus she does the soundtrack for the film. I mean, of course, everybody knows the song, We Don't Need Another Hero, and everything like that, which, you know, there's the music video and everything like that. But she really has a commanding presence in this film. And in a way, she, even though she's looked at as the villain of the movie, but she's not truly a villain. She's not like the Toe Cutter. She's not like the Lord Humongous in Road Warrior. She's not like any of them. She's just basically a woman that's running this community or whatnot, and she just wants to be in control. She does some questionable things, but I think living in this type of society at this point, everyone was doing questionable things. So, but is she really a bad person? I don't know. And there's certain instances that show that maybe she's not so much of a terrible person. She just do bad things if she wants to survive in a way. So getting back to the story. So Max and some of the kids, they go back to Bartertown because Max wants to go back to get his freaking wheels and everything. And they decide to go break out Master, who now is a prisoner at this point, who's forced to run. He still runs Bartertown, but he's not in control of Bartertown and everything. So they go back, him and some of the kids, along with some, I think it's Savannah Nix and a couple of the other kids. It's like, I think it's like eight of them or whatnot. And they go back and they meet up with this guy who's another prisoner there. He's a prisoner, but he has a pig killer carved into his chest, and he has chains, and they link up with him, and he, you know, joins them in their quest to, you know, free the little man and get out of there, and, you know, basically try to get to a better life. So they do. And Auntie, she realizes it once she sees the whole breakout going on, and she sees that it's Max that's back. So this pisses her off. So from this point on, this is where the movie turns into this whole chase thing. And Max, you know, and company, they escape, and they get on this train and everything, and they're, you know, out of there, and they're thinking that they're, you know, they're home free. But then they look in the distance, and there's Auntie and all her men chasing them. So we get this, it's a cool chase scene for the most part. It's not on the same level, I would say, as the chase from the previous two films, but it's still a good chase scene. It's a thrilling one, and it does keep you in grip, but it's not on par, for me at least, it's not on par with the ones that came in the first two movies. So Auntie and everything, they get up to the train, and for some reason, the fact that they're in the back of all the way in the back of the train and everything, Max and everyone, but once they see the Auntie and them, they start jumping on top of the train trying to get away, and they unlatch the last, the caboose, basically. And it's a funny scene where the one guy, he realizes that the thing is like coming unhinged. So Auntie tells him to hold it, and which he does. He literally is hanging on with his feet to the caboose and holding on to the rest of the train, and until they thinking that they're going to get the little man, but Max, he grabs him, and then he jumps onto the rest of the train, and then you see him, like, the guy that was holding on, he's like waving his arms and everything, and as the rest of the train is going, and it just pisses Auntie off. And as they're going down these train tracks, we see freaking Jedi Jr. again, who's blocked off the train, and he's like, this is a stick up and everything like this. It's like, what the hell is he going to do? He's like 3 feet tall. He ain't going to do nothing. But he got these big guns in his hand. And then they stop. They look at him. And then he looks and sees that this convoy is coming behind. So he takes off running and they jump off the train. They follow him and they go down to his underground lair. And that's where we are introduced again to Jedediah Sr. And as they're running down in the caves and everything, Jedi hears them. He's like, oh, crap. And Max, he's running by. He sees him. He's just like, it's you. And, you know, they kind of have a moment or whatnot. And he's like, you got a plane. He's like, I do. He's like, yeah, you're going to fly. He's like, I will. He's like, yeah. He's like, it just might save your life. And so he just, so they all cram into this plane or whatnot. And he's telling Max, he's like, look, it's not enough runway between us and them and everything like that for him to take off. So Max is like, all right, fine. So Max ends up getting into one of the cars that Auntie's goons had, and he basically gets out in front and he makes a path because there's this one guy that's one of Auntie's goons that's kind of had it in for Max the whole freaking movie. And I would say he's supposed to be like the Wes type character here, but he's like a goof or whatnot. The dude supposed to have died at least like 3 times because there's a part on the train where he's hanging on to a piece of the train that kind of bent down and is hanging and whatnot. And as they're going across the circuit, he's hanging on for life. And then they saw the thing off and he goes crashing down. We think we was never going to see him again because we thought he died, but he comes back and he jumps out in front and he's going to play chicken with Max. Now, I felt like this was a throwback to the original film with Max, because with him playing chicken with the Knight Rider, once again, Max doesn't sway away from chicken, but this dude doesn't know that. But I thought it was a nice little, you know, throwback to that moment and everything. And as they're driving along or whatnot, they're coming head on to each other, and Max realizing, okay, he's not gonna, but I need to make room for this plane. So Max jumps off the car. Dude doesn't realize to the last second, and it smashes his car to pieces. Max dives off into the dirt. The plane takes off, and as they're flying off, they look back and see like the whole, you know, chaos that's going down on the ground and everything, and they fly off to safety and everything like that. And then we get where Max, he's kind of hurt or whatnot, and you know, her auntie's goons, they have their guns on Max, and their auntie, she comes up and she says the infamous line,
well, ain't we a pair, Raggedy Man? Goodbye, soldier.
As they're driving away, Max gets up and he starts walking, and he just has this look on his face, and I've always had the feeling like this movie just proves that he was truly destined just to roam the wasteland. Because the second movie, The Road Warrior, it ends with him with that ominous shot of him standing on the highway, on that road or whatnot, and it's like a bleakness to it. But this one, it's more of a, it's not as bleak as the second one, but it still has that same type of like Max is forever to just roam the wastelands. He can never have like true happiness. Now he can help others get out and get to, you know, a better life for themselves, but he himself, he's destined to just roam these wastelands for the rest of his life, basically. And it's kind of sad too when you think about it, especially with if this was the true ending of the Mad Max story. That was the last image that you see of him, is just him there with the crashed up truck in the background of him, And just that shot of him just walking and looking away and everything like that. And of course, Savannah Nix and the rest of the survivors, they go on and live a nice life and everything. So the ending in this movie is somewhat similar to the ending from The World Warrior, but just a little bit different. So, I mean, that's pretty much how the movie ends, and everything like that. Now, one thing I haven't really done too much in these three episodes is truly talk about Mel Gibson's performance in these movies. So, like I say, when 1979's Mad Max came out, no one in America really knew who Mel Gibson was. Then by 81, he still didn't really know who he was to some degree, but he started gaining traction because of the Mad Max. And I think The Road Warrior helped really like bring him to the American forefront. But by 1985, he had become a name, even though it wouldn't be until a few years later with Lethal Weapon that he would become a big, you know, star and everything. But the Mad Max movies are the movies that really, you know, put him on the map to a large degree. And I notice as the series goes along, his character is from a character standpoint, his character gets smaller. The character gets smaller and smaller, but his actions, I should say, they change. Because we know his true backstory, but no one that he comes encounter with in The Road Warrior or Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, they know his backstory. So we know his character story, but they don't. So a lot of the actions and things that he do and the reason why he doesn't really want to take charge of anything, I think it all harkens back to what happened in the original Mad Max film. And one thing that was kind of interesting too with this movie, there is a few Easter eggs in the film. In particular, I mean, of course, his eye is still busted up from the crash in The Road Warrior. And also too, when he has to turn in his weapons in Bartertown or whatnot, he has Wes's crossbow. Is one of the weapons that he turns in and everything. He doesn't really have his trademark shotgun, well, sort of shotgun here. Even though he does, but he doesn't use it this time around. Unlike in the second movie, that was the only freaking thing he was using, was that sawed-off shotgun. But there, like I said, there's a few Easter eggs that show like he's had battles and, you know, scars that still continue. So there is like a continuity with his character. But as far as the development of the character, it seemed to kind of stop. But it doesn't stop Mel Gibson from giving a good performance in the sequels and everything like that. And then, like I say, his relationship with these kids. And I know a lot of people don't really like Beyond Thunderdome so much because it's so much of a contrast to what The Road Warrior was to some degree. And I feel like Fury Road, in a way, kind of makes up for that or whatnot. And speaking of Fury Road, I know it's the fourth Mad Max movie, but it would have been cool if some way, somehow, Mel Gibson and George Miller got together and did a true Mad Max 4 with Mel Gibson as Max in the 90s and everything. Because, I mean, he was the 90s, he owned the 90s for the most part. Mel Gibson did. Well, he was one of the kings of the 90s, I would say, as far as acting goes. Acting, you know, as a movie star. But it would have been cool if they would have got together and they did do a fourth Mad Max movie with Mel Gibson in the role once again. I think that would have been interesting too, especially in the 90s. We probably have seen even more action. And I don't think we would have got a Fury Road type movie, but it would have been interesting to see what story they could have came up with at that time. So if I had to give this movie a rating out of 5, I would give it a 2.5, 2.5, really. Like I say, it takes a step back from what the second movie laid out for what this post-apocalyptic, post-World War III-ish future looks like. It does take somewhat of a step back. The stuff with the kids, it kind of wasn't necessary, but I guess George Miller and company, they wanted to do something a little bit lighter in a way, because it does have like a Lost Boys type feel to it. And you could say that Auntie is like a Captain Hook in a way. And Max would be like, what, Peter Pan, I guess, it to some degree. So it does have like a little lighter tone. And I guess they wanted to do that too, because of the second movie does have like this darkness to it. It is very, the second movie is kind of dark, especially like watching this movie after the second movie. You can see how it goes from being this dark, you know, movie to where it's more lighthearted with the third movie. And I think people wanted more of what the second movie brought, not necessarily what the third movie gave us, to some degree. And if I had to have a favorite character, now the previous two episodes, I said I had interesting characters. Well, I have a favorite interesting character, and that would be of one Auntie, Miss Tina Turner, because, like I said, how did this woman become the leader of this community? Because for the most part, there's a lot of men here, and for her to be the one that's in charge of these men and everything like that, how did that happen? I would love to got more backstory of Auntie's story, in a way, to how she became the leader of this freaking town, and why did these men follow her? Like, she must have been really ruthless or whatnot. And like I say, she's not necessarily a bad person. She just does bad things. And to you know, continue to have control in a way, because like I say, at this point, you want to be one of the ones that's in a good position. I feel like in like post-apocalyptic movies, you want to be in a good position. You don't want to be on the other side where you're basically getting stepped on and everything like that. So how did she become the ruler of Bartertown and everything? That's an interesting story. And she's an interesting character. And the fact that she lets Max live at the end, it's almost like she admired him and everything, because she could have killed him. I mean, you know, everything, they had the guns on him, but she just says, aren't we a pair, Raggedy Man? And she just says, farewell, soldier. And she rides off and just leaves him there. She just goes back to her community. She, you know, whatnot. It's like she accepted her losses, and she just, you know, she could have took it out on Max, but she didn't. So there is some humanity and levity to her character or whatnot. So that's why I would say that Tina Turner would be my favorite character. So that pretty much wraps up the Mad Max trilogy. Hope you guys enjoyed listening to me talk about these films. If you haven't seen these films, I do recommend checking them out, and everything. If you've only seen Fury Road, I definitely recommend you going back and checking out the first, three films of the series, just to kind of get more of a true history lesson of the Max character. And everything like that. And of course, before I get out of here, I do want to give a couple of shout outs. Of course, I have to shout out Jeff from Jeff Versus the World, JD from the Wrestle Bread Podcast, Austin and Connor from Dweeb Dive, and of course Ryan and Martin from the Blood and Black Rum Podcast. Definitely give those podcasts a listen. Hashtag Pod and Family all over Twitter and everything like that. You know, check out some great podcasts and things of that nature like that. And everything. As far as for me, you can check me out on Twitter at JMovieTalk, of course. Also on Instagram at JMT Podcast. And then you can check out all of the Movie Talk episodes, a part of the TV Zone Podcast Network, all across podcasting services. Just go to TV Zone Podcast. You type in TV Zone Podcast on any podcasting site, and everything will come up. And everything, you can find the episodes like that. Of course, the whole site is podbean.com and everything. And I will be back. I haven't fully decided if I want to do a Fury Road just as a completist type of thing for this, or will I be going on into what I have planned for February. But when I know, you guys will definitely find out as well, because I will post it and let you guys know what I'll be doing for February and everything. So once again, thank you guys for listening, and I will catch you guys next time. Peace.